The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
My guest today is Mike Maynard, who is the owner at Napier, a marketing and PR consultancy, and a fellow podcaster running the Marketing B2B Tech podcast. Mike, welcome. You are big in the world of new techniques in marketing. So can we explore some new technologies that marketers should be looking at and the techniques that that gives rise to?
Hi, Kiran. Well, thanks for having me on the podcast. We definitely see a lot of people looking for new techniques and new approaches in marketing, and probably more so since we've been suffering from the pandemic, because we, as an agency that targets business to business, are struggling because our clients want to reach people that are now working from home rather than working in the office. So it becomes perhaps a bit more difficult. You know, for example, somebody might have been, consuming, even trade magazines in the office. They're still getting sent to the office, but the person you want to reach is at home. So we've seen a lot of move in terms of new technologies, and mainly around, being more precise in the way you target people on digital. That to me, I think, is the biggest trend we're seeing at the moment.
So precision targeting, and yes, I know exactly what you mean about, we used to send out lots of physical things because I still think people like physical things, and you suddenly realise they're just stacking up in an unused office now.
Yeah, absolutely. So in fact, we just did a mailing to some of our clients, and we had to take the time to actually find home addresses for clients, and that was very time consuming. But as it turned out, because clients aren't getting very much at the moment because they're at home, it was really valuable. So I mean, you can still use old techniques to do precision targeting, and certainly postal mail is good, but it's much more difficult. I mean, today it's much more about targeting, people either by what they've done, so their behavior, who they are, so really their demographics, or which company they work for, so what people would call account-based marketing or ABM.
Okay, let's split those out. So even in the world of B2B marketing, are you still looking at behaviour and demographics?
Absolutely. So if we look at behaviour first, I mean, behaviour is a really important thing for a lot of our clients. And fundamentally, that comes down to retargeting. And I know retargeting hasn't always got the best reputation because of poor retargeting campaigns, the kind of campaigns where you buy something online and then adverts for the same product follow you around. Mm-hmm. That's not a problem with retargeting. I mean, that's a problem with the way people have implemented it. And really good retargeting is incredibly effective. So where we have people, for example, showing interest on certain client products, you might want to send them ads of related products or things they might want to know. So in business to business, quite often that's, white papers or other information to learn about those products or those technologies. And so behavior-based targeting is very important. And that's typically around engaging with content that the client produces, whether that's on their website or whether that's on social media like LinkedIn, for example. And in business to business, LinkedIn is the biggest network for marketing activity. And the reason for that is the demographics. And that's because a lot of our clients will know exactly who they want to target. So for example, I want to target, plant managers in the food and beverage industry, because I know these people buy this particular product, whether it's a software product or a labeling product or anything else. And so what you can do with platforms like LinkedIn is you can literally target people who manage plants in the food and beverage industry. And that is incredibly effective. So demographics really matter. Now, the interesting thing is they're slightly different demographics to the kind of demographics you'd look at in terms of, say, consumer marketing. So you're not necessarily looking at age or gender or things like that. You're looking at job role, position, seniority, years in the job, all these kind of things that you can target through platforms like LinkedIn.
Can we explore a bit more about, you said that the bad retargeting gets a bad press because people do it badly. So what's the difference between badly done and well done retargeting?
Well, I think that the simple answer is remaining relevant, which is a one-word answer that actually is quite a complex answer when you dig deep. So, I mean, I think the thing people dislike the most is when they go to a vendor, they look at a product, they buy that product, and then they still get ads. And that is really just poor retargeting, because, you know, in almost all cases, you're not going to repeat buy that product straight away. So if you buy a pair of shoes, you don't want to buy the same pair of shoes again the next week. So businesses should really understand suppression lists in retargeting. So they should understand, yes, okay, where someone comes and visits and looks at this particular product, I can retarget them, but I should stop retargeting as soon as they buy it, because it's just not relevant anymore. And the same thing can happen in business to business. You know, I talked about behavior-based targeting for retargeting. So what people are looking at on a website. Now, in a business to business context, that might not necessarily purely be products. It might be information about markets or applications or technologies rather than just a product. And it can get very difficult to work out also when people buy, because, again, people are generally not buying online in a business-to-business situation. They're buying with salespeople. But what you've got to think of as a marketer is you've got to think about, you know, what is the intent? And, you know, Google will love me for saying this because they're big on intent marketing. But, you know, it's really understanding what people intend to do based on the web history they have with your website. So just because someone visits a page doesn't necessarily mean they're super interested in it. It could mean you've just got terrible navigation on your website and they've ended up at the wrong page. So it's about really learning what customers want, what customers are interested in, and then delivering the adverts. And that's not a simple, you know, easy one-step process. So you need to think about the customer. So most people today will develop customer journeys, particularly in business to business. And so you'll use the customer journey to understand, you know, what interest in a particular page might mean. It may not mean that they desperately want information about that particular application over and over again or that product. It might mean that they're a certain stage of the customer journey or they're likely to be working in a certain market. So send them information that that sort of person would be interested in. Don't just keep pumping out the same information as they've already seen on the page. That's a total waste of time. It's not going to help. So it really is about thinking about the customer, thinking about what they did on the website, and then from that, giving them information that's useful and relevant. And that's what I mean by saying relevance ultimately is the key, is if you're giving content that's relevant and useful, then it's good retargeting. If you're giving content that people think is irrelevant or don't find helpful, it's bad retargeting. And that's a really simple way to think about it.
I like simple ways of thinking about things, but I suspect it's more complex in working out your intent marketing. So are there tools and techniques I can use that would help me really understand the customer and why they are dwelling on that particular page or keep coming back to that page?
Yeah, so there's different ways to do that. So one approach is to look at it from the customer. And this is where things like personas or ideal customer profiles and customer journeys come in, is trying to think through what the customer might be doing. But also there's another way to look at it, which is to actually look at what people do when they visit a particular page. So do they then go on and look at other pages? Or do they leave the site? And if they leave the site, then is that because they've got all the information, which probably says you don't need to give them any more information? Or is it because the information is irrelevant, which again probably says you don't need to give them more information? So what you're trying to do is almost get one step ahead of that customer, either by trying to get inside their head by building these models such as journeys, or by literally looking at behavior on your website. And you can pull data from Google Analytics and see where people go after visiting a particular page, because that gives you a really good indication of what people might be interested in. And so, for example, if, you know, 10% of people visit page A and then go on to page B, perhaps that other 90% should receive content that's related to what was on page B, because that's probably the next step in their journey. It is difficult, and the only way you can actually really make it work is by analysing how effective your campaigns are. So if you're running a retargeting campaign and you're getting no interaction, nobody's clicking on the ads you're running, it probably says your retargeting campaign isn't very good. But if you're getting a huge level of interaction, everyone's clicking on the ads and then maybe going through and, you know, either buying product in the context of an e-commerce site or in the context of business to business, perhaps downloading white papers and pulling content that way, that probably says you've got it right. So to me, it's all about making sure that whatever you do, you monitor to see what people really are doing in response to your ads. So understand their response, and that will tell you how well it's working.
Okay, so in B2B, of course, one of the additional issues is you've got decision-making units. So it's not usually one person that gets to press the button and go, right, we're buying that. You've got lots of other people around. So is that, how does that obviously complicates things. So how do you overcome that?
That's a great question. And the answer is that you don't try and sell something to everybody. So you need to understand the decision-making unit, the DMU, and you need to understand who's important and who's not important in that. And some of those people you can reach through marketing, and sometimes you actually probably are better reaching people through sales. But, you know, to give an example, if you're looking at selling something that's a high capital cost to a business, then almost certainly the financial department will have a say in it. And that could be something, you know, as simple as just approving the budget, or it could be something as complex as deciding, you know, whether it's bought as a cash purchase or whether it's bought through a lease to manage cash flow. So clearly what you need to provide the finance department is very different. They actually, you know, really are not that interested in what your product's going to do for the business. They're interested in the best financial arrangement for that product. The people who care about what the product's going to do for the business are going to be the people who are using it. And they're the experts. And if you're the CFO of an organization, you're not going to go in and overrule the experts on whether particular equipment is good or bad. What you want to do is know about the returns. So, as I say, that could be, you know, something like offering different approaches to buying. So you could have a lease purchase, or you could have outright cash purchase as being two options that you'd want to target to financial decision makers. But it could also be things like return on investment calculators. And they're widely used in business-to-business marketing. And I'll be honest, they always kind of trivialize the return on investment, but they're great for starting a discussion internally. So, you know, offering a tool that provides a return on investment calculation for a finance team that doesn't want to go deep into the technology of the product they're buying, that can be a great way to engage, you know, those influences in the decision-making process.
One of the other things I found very interesting, you wrote a blog a couple of years ago about customer journeys, and you talked about the fact that we need to put in delays. So we tend to assume that the customers start at one place and then just step through it in a sort of linear format. And that's also an element of understanding the complexities of a decision-making unit.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you look at customer journeys and the mythology behind it, I don't know if it's true. I have looked to see if it's true or not, and I couldn't find any real evidence, was that the concept of customer journeys was developed for Eurostar. It was all about the process of a consumer buying a ticket, a train ticket. And clearly there, that's a pretty short-term kind of process. Even if you buy in advance, typically you're not buying that far in advance. That's very, very different from business to business. So quite often with business to business, you'll be dealing with selling products into companies that do annual budgeting. So if you're not, if your product's not included in the budget for the current year, you might have to wait till the next year. But also you can sell some, you know, very complex products. I mean, we have several clients with multi-year sales cycles, but one of our clients develops baggage handling systems for airports. Now, one of the things you need to have to be able to buy a baggage handling system is you need an airport terminal without a baggage handling system, yep. Which basically means you either need to refurbish an airport terminal or build a new one. And these things take a lot of time, and particularly in places like Europe where there's planning issues, it can take years and years. And actually, they talk about having 20-year sales cycles. So if you imagine that you can send some content, move people onto the next stage, send the next bit of content, they go onto the next stage, next bit of content, they go onto the next stage, it just isn't going to happen, because that airport is not magically going to have a second terminal appear out of nowhere. It's going to take years and years to build. So understanding delays, I totally agree, is a really important part of that customer journey. And there, what you're looking to do is, rather than the conventional approach where, you know, you always think about a customer journey, you think about, well, what do I send someone to move them to the next step? Actually, sometimes people are going to sit in the same stage all the time. And the question then is not about moving them on, because they can't, they haven't built their terminal. But it's very much about, what can I send them to engage them and stay top of mind and remain the preferred supplier? And that can get very difficult when, frankly, the customer is more concerned about other things, like building the terminal. And a terminal, obviously, it's a very complex building. It's not just a baggage handling system. And so you may be fairly low down on that customer's priority list. And how do you engage them? That can then become very difficult. So you need to think about what their concerns are, you know, the kind of things they're thinking about, and bring content to them, or bring information that is going to relate your baggage handling system to the concerns they'll have at the moment. So yeah, delays are super, super important for all sorts of reasons in business to business. I mean, there are delays in consumer. And so, you know, for example, I always remember years and years ago when I was learning marketing, and we had a lecturer who was super enthusiastic, and he was just like, right, there's only one question you need to ask when selling a car. And we were all pushed around, what was it? You know, what do you like about cars? What, you know? And he said, you know, the only question is, when do you expect to change it? And from a car manufacturer's point of view, it's really important, because consumers will buy a car. Some people will keep that car pretty much for the car's lifetime. Other people might change their car every 2 or 3 years. And so when people are buying cars, it then becomes really important to understand when they're going to next buy a car, because that's when you want to market your new model to them. There's no point marketing a new car, you know, 3 weeks after they've just bought one, because all they'll do is they'll feel disappointed they had the older model. And I think, you know, it's interesting in consumer. One of the reasons I believe that PCP arrangements and other sort of lease purchase for new cars has been so popular and so successful is that the companies have this automatic built-in timescale. They know for sure when somebody's contract is up, so they know when that person is going to buy a new car, so they can then market to them very effectively. And it's a really simple example of data actually being really valuable. And you have one piece of data when the contract ends. And that means that as a company, you will be the best at marketing in terms of timing, because you know exactly when that person will be looking for a new car.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you was around the use of artificial intelligence in particularly in PR, where it's becoming quite a sort of big topic about whether artificial intelligence will become the future of PR or just feed into it. Do you have a view on that?
That's such a good question, because there's so many ways to answer this. And you know, a very simple answer would be, well, yeah, AI is going to have an impact. But equally, another equally simple answer is, well, actually, AI needs huge data sets to train it. And as a PR professional, I'm not going to send out 10,000 press releases, so I've got a data set to train my AI on. It's to work out what the best headline is for a press release. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see where it appears. And my take is that there will be certain areas that AI begins to have an impact, but it will almost certainly be in PR in an advisory role. So, for example, within PR, you know, I see things like advising on most effective headlines, where AIs can look at content. And initially, I mean, some of the people in this area are training AIs across a broad spectrum of media, but I see in the future, you know, there'll be very specialist AIs looking at, you know, the best sort of headline to be successful in, you know, electronic engineering or in, you know, other specialist areas. So I definitely see that as being an area. And to be honest, you know, to some extent, people are already kind of using it with things like grammar checkers. So it's just really a step forward from that point of view. But I think there is a real problem in terms of AI, for want of a better word, running PR, because that it's just so hard to get that data. It's not the same as, you know, running Google Ads, for example, where, you know, quite often even PR professionals using Google Ads to boost up, say, videos they've created, they're using AI, they're quite happy to trust the Google AI. But every single ad that Google puts out is effectively a test, and those tests are costing you fractions of a cent. Whereas to issue a press release will cost you potentially hundreds of dollars or hundreds of pounds. And that then becomes almost unscalable to the level where you could train an AI to actually have enough knowledge to then be able to give you really good advice. And of course, the other thing you see as well is that the world is continually changing. And with PR particularly, a lot of the goals of PR campaigns are around, you know, really trying to do something different or unusual to stand out. And AIs aren't very good at that. AIs are very good at, you know, looking at what everybody does and getting the best version of what everybody does. But to do something very different, that's something that we haven't got to with AI. You know, I'm sure in the future we'll get closer and closer. But whether we, you know, whether we have someone, you know, sitting listening to a client brief and then saying, right, we're going to ask the AI which celebrity you should use, or, you know, whether you should, you know, try and get a Guinness World Record or a picture of a celebrity. I don't know. I think that's going to be very hard because you just don't have that training set of data. And it's very, very different to other areas of marketing. And in particular, you know, pay-per-click advertising, where you can conduct, you know, millions of experiments for relatively little money. And that's where AI is doing incredibly well at the moment for marketing.
So that's interesting. So AI very much is a sort of incremental increase in what you're doing, rather than making the sort of breakout creative leap.
Yeah, for sure. In PR, that's definitely the case. As I say, in advertising, again, it really is more incremental. I mean, Google is not writing your ads when you go to Google Ads. Google is doing things like it will pick the best headlines. Unfortunately, with Google, though, they have things influencing the algorithm that may or may not give you the right example. I mean, I would say it's very, very occasionally, we do see examples where the Google algorithm is not picking the best ad. To be honest, we more often see times where Google algorithm runs and proves us wrong, our intuition wrong. We think one ad is going to run better than another, and actually we're wrong. So, you know, it's really important to test. And whether or not you're using AI, it's important to say, I believe this is going to be the case, but I'm going to test to make sure that it really is. But I think with AI taking over, that's going to be hard. And it is really still very much around these, you know, optimization type AIs that are you know, having an influence at the moment. So it's, you know, what's the best headline? What's the best image? All of those kind of things are where AI is really having a tangible impact.
Mike Maynard, thank you very much for your insights today. That's been absolutely fascinating. And I shall be watch the rise of AI in PR with great interest. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Kieran.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.